Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now a 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball! Deep to left field! Way, way back! It's gone!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Clayton Kershaw's brilliance in Game 5 has the Dodgers on the brink of their first World Series championship since 1988. We're going to talk World Series baseball. It's a rare off night for the baseball playoffs. We've only had two of these since the playoffs began. It's the second of the World Series. Tomorrow night, the Dodgers will have an opportunity to close it out, and they'll have to rely on the arm of Tony Gonsolin, while Tampa, they will throw everything in the kitchen sink at the Dodgers. We saw this in Game 4, and I expect there to be a lot of drama when we continue the World Series tomorrow night. We're going to talk about that and more right now with our next guest, Steve Bortstein. He's a great friend of mine, great friend of the show, joined us for many years to talk baseball, horse racing, among other things. And Steve, the Dodgers are one win away from a World Series. First time in the Dave Roberts era that they have held a three-game lead over anyone. And what I mean by three-game lead, they've gotten to win number three before the opponents. It's the first time this has happened.
I want you to say it again so you hear it yourself. The Dodgers have the lead and can win the World Series with one win. I want you to say it again, and I want people to hear it, because Jordan Buscarini, just for the listeners out there, is a fan of the Dodgers. I am a fan of the Dodgers. I am the old man who calms him down during games when everything looks to be going wrong, and I have to be the old Sith master who has to calm down the young Jedi over here. Because during the games, the last couple of nights, now granted, Game 4 turned into a disaster at the end, and we'll get to that in a second, but Jordan has a tendency to think the world is coming to an end, and I have to calm him down, and things are going to be okay.
Look,
but it's so much fun, and I want to also say, before we turn it over to you for a minute here, and I know you have a lot, we have a lot to talk about, I read a report that this is the lowest-rated World Series ever. The TV ratings are bad. Let me just say, shame on you if you're not watching.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what more baseball could have done in this pandemic than to have the two best teams from the two leagues in Major League Baseball play what has been an epic World Series, and you're still not watching. That's on you at this point. I don't care what your beliefs might be, what your opinions might be. I don't give a damn. If you're not watching this, shame on you, because this is turning out to be a classic World Series.
I agree 100%, and I'm glad you bring up the fanhood. See, this is an opportunity for me to relate to a listener. Okay, so in the state of Utah, Utah Jazz fans are so passionate. They love their team. One thing that Jazz fans have never seen is an NBA championship. And so if you're a Jazz fan, you tend to think that the sky is falling. Look, I talk to Jazz fans all the time, and I try to stay completely unbiased here on the show. But look, I bleed Dodger blue. And Steve, one thing that I have never seen, you've got to see this, my father has got to see this, I have never watched the Dodgers win a World Series. And so I'm sure Jazz fans can relate to me when I say, when Manuel Margot goes from first to third and attempts to steal home, you tend to believe the sky is falling and worst case scenario is going to happen because of the 2008 NLCS, the 2009 NLCS, the 2017 World Series, the 2018 World Series, the 2019 Divisional Round. The sky typically falls with the Dodgers. Jazz fans have to be able to relate to that.
I get it. And yes, I'm old, so I've seen a Dodgers World Series. You're the young Skywalker out there, and I have to play the old Obi-Wan Kenobi role of, okay, this is going to be all right. When Margot's on third last night, the world's coming to an end at Jordan's house, and me, I'm like, patience, patience. Now, when I'm saying that to you through instant messenger on Facebook, I never thought the Margot stealing home thing was going to happen, but he got out of it. Kershaw got out of the jam that he comes out out, throws two great innings. It's like, okay, we're back to normal now. Everything's going to be fine. So it is fun to be the passionate fan, but it's also mind-numbing to be the old fan in the room, because how do you explain game four to somebody? So it's been an interesting, you know, web of emotions, and I know there's going to be a lot more of them Tuesday and perhaps Wednesday for game seven.
Yeah, let's talk about the Rays before we dive into the Dodgers here, because again, you mentioned Margot and his attempt to steal home, and look, it's very, very difficult to not like the Tampa Bay Rays. You know, if you watch baseball, there are teams that you begin not to like. If you're not a San Diego Padre fan, you probably don't like the San Diego Padres. If you're not an Atlanta Brave fan, you probably don't like the antics of Ronald Acuna. Okay, when you watch Tampa Bay, even if you're not a Ray fan, you have to appreciate what Kevin Cash and what this Rays roster brings to the table. And Manuel Margot was a guy that, look, being a Dodger fan, you being a Dodger fan, we watched this guy a lot with the Padres. We knew he had the capability of being special. And last night, he nearly pulled off a play that we would be talking about 20 years from now had it been successful stealing home on Clayton Kershaw in Game 5 of the World Series.
Sure, I go back, and I'll use football for an analogy here. Being an SC guy, being a USC fan, being a USC alum, I'm never going to not see Vince Young. Never. I will go the rest of my life watching Vince Young score that touchdown in the Rose Bowl for the national championship, beating USC in 2006. I'm never going to live that down. I will forever see that. We would have forever seen Manuel Margot stealing home. We will forever, if the Rays turn out to win this World Series, we will forever see Randy Arozarena tapping on home plate, scoring the winning run in Game 4. So we're always going to have to deal with that. My hope is that we're going to see, you know, whoever ends up on the mound in the ninth inning, you know, tomorrow night or Wednesday night, getting on the mound, raising their arms in victory, because that's the memory we're going to go with. And I liked your analogy there also of the Padres and the Braves, because there's not a personality on the Rays roster that you inherently dislike. Like, they're all good guys, right? We haven't heard anything, you know, off-putting about Randy Arozarena. We haven't heard anything off-putting about Chi-Man Choi. We haven't heard anything off-putting about their pitchers or anything like that. So you don't inherently dislike anybody on the team. And I think that's also why maybe some people aren't watching, is that there aren't like these abundantly, you know, overwhelming personalities. There's the, we feel bad for Kershaw because of his well-chronicled postseason difficulties. We like Cody Bellinger because he doesn't talk a lot. He doesn't talk a lot of trash. We like Justin Turner because he's a good guy. There's not one guy on these rosters that I think you inherently dislike. Even if you're not a Dodgers fan, it's not like you go around and go, oh, I hate that guy, right? I think that's one of the reasons, because we're in that culture now where you have to have a common enemy. People don't like LeBron James. People don't like Tom Brady. You don't have those rosters. You don't have those personalities on either of these rosters, and maybe that's why there's not the great ratings for this. I don't really care. I think it's a horrible excuse to not watch this, but I think, you know, I've grown in appreciation of who the Rays are, right? I mean, I think I've gotten that. I think we all have that now. We might not have known a lot about them because of a 60-game season. We didn't see a lot of their games, perhaps. I don't think there's one guy on that roster that I go, boy, I really hate that guy.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%, and I think that is part of the reason why, while they bring anguish, it's just different. It's different with this Rays team. You look at what they have done as far as the gauntlet that they have gone through to get to this point. I mean, they topped the Yankees. They topped the Astros. They've done everything that was asked of them, and they've done it in fairly dominating fashion when you take a look at the rosters that they have gone up against. Now, while they are a great story, last night, in my mind, there was an even greater story, and that was Clayton Kershaw. For the very first time in his career, he has won two games within the same series. We are talking about one of the greatest pitchers to ever play the game. There's no question about it. And now, as far as postseason strikeouts, he is the all-time leader as he passes Justin Verlander last night, 206 strikeouts in the postseason. Throughout this postseason, he has been incredible. 30 innings, 2.9 ERA, 37 strikeouts, and now he is 1-1 away from the ultimate redemption. The idea of seeing Kershaw in the dugout last year following the setback to the Nationals, where he was asked to really bail his team out of a very difficult situation and he came up short, to me, that's been the reoccurring theme, Steve, over the course of Clayton Kershaw's career. This guy's pitched on short rest. This guy has gone into impossible situations when we knew the Dodgers weren't the better team, be it against the Cardinals or the Phillies, or even last year against the Nationals. You look at the situations that Kershaw has failed in, and they've almost been unfair to him. This was his chance to rewrite the narrative, and regardless if the Dodgers win or not, he did that this postseason.
And I want to give credit here. I want to give a shout out here to Mark Pryor and the job he's done navigating this pitching staff. And no offense to Rick Honeycutt, who did a great job at that job, who did a great job at that position for years with the Dodger organization. But Mark Pryor has had to juggle a lot during this postseason run here and throughout this entire season. Mark Pryor has done an amazing job with this staff. I mean, think of the things that this staff has had to go through just in the last month and a half. You had the Buehler blister issue. You had Kenley Jansen, who we'll talk about, I'm sure, at some point, and his emotional, mental state, his physical state, you know, trying to keep him on balance. Dustin May, trying to get him into a role where he's comfortable. Bring in Gratterall, a new kid who, you know, we didn't know a lot about this season. Gonzalez, Urias, the constant shuffling of the pitching staff, so whether they be starters, whether then to find out, okay, we signed David Price in the offseason, now he's going to opt out. Mark Pryor's done an amazing job, and in particular with Clayton Kershaw. I know we kind of questioned them pulling, Dave Roberts pulling Kershaw when they did last night. It was a gamble, and it worked this time. That's great. But it was an analytics thing, which we can argue that forever, whether analytics work or not. But I got to give Mark Pryor a lot of credit for the job he's done navigating and managing this pitching staff throughout this season.
No question. No question about it. Again, Steve Bortstein, our guest right now as we talk World Series. A rare off night, and then tomorrow it's game six. And if you're the Rays, even though you're down 3-2 in this series, if you would have told Kevin Cash at the beginning of the season, you're down 3-2 in the World Series, but you still have Blake Snell and Charlie Morton, they would have taken that scenario. Likewise, if you look at the Dodgers, you would say, look, you're one win away. You have game six, but you're going to be throwing Walker Buehler game seven. Dave Roberts would have taken that scenario. So I don't know that the Dodgers obviously hold the advantage, but to think that this series is over is premature because, again, the two aces for Tampa Bay are still in Kevin Cash's holster. Tomorrow night's going to be an intriguing game. Tony Gonsolin against Blake Snell.
And I'm gonna push back on they have the advantage with having the two starters here. Because last night we saw how two starters coming back in the series have fared. The Dodgers got to Glasnow the second time they saw him. The Rays didn't get to Kershaw last night. They got one run on Clayton Kershaw last night. One. So I will push back on that, the fact that Blake Snell's coming out for performance number two, that's an advantage. Now we've seen him. We know what he brings. We know how we adjust to it, right? If you're the Dodgers, we know how we'll adjust to Blake Snell. We'll be able to get runs on him. We'll be able to get to him. That's the key to a second starter in a series, is how the team adjusts to that starter the second time they see him. Snell was brilliant in game two when he started. Okay, can he do it again in game six, where there's a lot more on the line? Again, being down 1-0 in a series and being down 3-2 in a series, it's a different set of emotions. Gonsolin, for his part, wasn't exceptional in game two. Wasn't at all. So it's the same scenario for him, but he's got the advantage of knowing what's waiting for him in game seven. Rays don't have that advantage. I think if the Dodgers can just elongate the bats, elongate the at-bats. That's what they did not do in game two against Blake Snell. They didn't elongate at-bats. They swung at pitches early. They bought in early. They bit on that changeup. I think if the Dodgers can adjust to that, get to him, I think that's going to be the difference. You've got to get runs on the board because the weakness, as it turns out, is the lower half of that bullpen. That's the weak link right there for the Rays. And the fact is, we talked about Margot trying to steal home. The fact of the matter is that I think we're seeing that Kevin Cash doesn't necessarily believe that his offense can manufacture runs. Now, they've been able to do so at times, but not all the time. The majority of their runs throughout the postseason have been scored with the long ball. And even throughout this World Series, they've relied on that. Their ability to create runs is not great. And I don't know if Kevin Cash doesn't know that already, and that's why maybe you made that decision to steal home. Maybe that's why, you know, they've gone to so many different pieces in that bullpen for the Rays, is that they don't have enough confidence in their offense to go run for run. It worked out in Game 4, but it hasn't worked out in other situations here. If the Dodgers can put runs on the board early, force them into a situation where they start playing desperate, again, down 3-2 is a whole hell of a lot different than being up 3-2. If you're playing that way, I give the advantage to the Dodgers if they can get pressure, elongate at-bats, and that's been something the Dodgers have done great at this series, in particular Max Muncy. We'll talk about that in a moment. But I think that's the difference in Game 6. Believe me, I'd love to see Buehler throw again, but I don't mind if it's next season. I don't have a problem with that at all.
You mentioned Max Muncy, and while everyone will talk about Corey Seager, they'll talk about a Rosarena, which is phenomenal itself, because I can't recall the last time we had a World Series where it was the number two hitter in each lineup that you feared. And that's where we're at right now. Corey Seager and a Rosarena, they have the hottest bats in this series, yet Max Muncy has been... he's been incredible, and that's a word that gets used often, but when you look at the postseason, I don't think you can oversell, Steve, what he's been able to accomplish. He has reached a base. I believe it's 15 consecutive games now he has reached a base, and he has, what, 20 walks, if I'm not mistaken. He hits a solo home run last night. Max Muncy is really one of the big MVPs for the Dodgers this postseason. I don't think there's any question about it.
And it's the, and again, this goes to the elongated at-bats. It's the frustrating foul ball off to the side, foul tips. It's the fouls off the netting in left or right field. And we take those for granted. And I think, you know, if you're a novice baseball fan, or if you're someone who just watches once in a while, foul balls are boring, right? And they are. But it's the effect they have on the opposing pitcher. It's the effect they have on opposing fielders. I go back to the stolen base of Mookie Betts getting to third the other night, when the second base, when the shortstop of the Rays is trying to navigate between, you know, you don't want him to see signs, but he has to move around, and that's why they can't make plays in the outfield. It's the game within the game that we don't pay enough attention to. Muncy's ability to elongate at-bats, Justin Turner's ability to do that, hell, even Cody Bellinger, who hasn't been remarkable this postseason. He's had a couple of great moments, particularly in the outfield. But the ability to elongate at-bats, the ability to frustrate a pitcher, the ability to frustrate a defense, and to wear them down a little bit each time they come to the plate has been a remarkable this series. Even in addition to Muncy's numbers, once he's on base, once he does make contact, it's the elongated at-bats. It's the ability to drive up a pitch count when clearly you don't want to drive up that pitch count. That's been the real mainstay of this series for those three players in particular. Muncy, Turner, and Bellinger, whose numbers again have been great, but he's been able to see things better, and that's a huge difference in a two-game series.
Steve Bordstein, again, our guest right now. Steve, Game 6 of the World Series tomorrow. Regardless, the season's coming to an end over the next couple of days. Win or lose, I've got to get you back on the show later this week, because if it's a loss, you and I have shared that agony on each other's shows before. If it's a win, it's a joy that neither one of us have ever tasted on each other's show. So one way or another, we've got to get you back on later this week.
All right, but last thing. Is it over tomorrow or is it over Wednesday?
It's over Wednesday. I'm going to take Tampa to win Game 6.
It's over tomorrow.
All right. One of us will be right. I
hope tomorrow.
I hope it's you.
Over tomorrow, and you and I are going to be, and you and I are going to watch a, and you and I are going to watch a victory parade virtually, because we don't want to break restrictions. But we're going to watch a victory parade this week in Los Angeles.
I hope. I hope you're right. I hope you're right, Steve.
Patience, my young Jedi. Patience.
Yeah. Steve Bordstein. He's the calming presence, if you haven't noticed, joining us here on Drive Time Sports today.
So you're the only person that actually believes that, by the way.
Well,
so, yeah.
I do. You know what? My wife and father would probably agree with you being the calming presence after last night as well. So they extend their thanks to you as well. I'm sure they do.
My pleasure.
Let's pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.